So we were up to the Mishnah on Daf Samach Tes Amud Aleph, and we're taking now a little bit, reverting back to the topic of Yayin Nesach, not in the sense of the Yerideya, of Bittul, of mixtures, and when it's Mutter, when it's Aser, but rather back to the concern of whether Yayin, which was left in the possession of a Goy, under those circumstances, when are we concerned that he might have been Menasech, when he might have put his hand in it, touched it, and so on. So the Mishnah begins, Obi Kochavim, Shahaya Mavir.
Where are you?
Oh, I'm sorry, Daf Samach Tes Amud Aleph. 16.
Yeah.
So Obi Kochavim, Shahaya Mavir, Li Yisrael, Kada Yayin Mimakom Lamakom. So the Akum is serving as a carrier, a porter, to move the Yisrael's wine barrels, whatever they have, flasks. I don't know, for us. Mimakom lamakom. Imhaye becheskas hamishtamer mutar. If, and this, the Gemara is going to deal with this because the presentation of the Mishnah is a little odd at first. If the wine was in the, had a chazaka being mishtamer, of being watched, of having eyes after it, so then, and it doesn't mean literally watched, but it means protected, then it's mutar. We don't assume the wine becomes yainesa. Now, im hodio, now this appears to be a contrast, but the logical gap is going to be obvious. Im hodio shehu muflag, humaflig. If he tells the Nachri that he's going on a little journey, meaning I'll be back, I have an errand to run. So how much, once he tells that to the Nachri can assume that he's not going to be back, at least for that amount of time. So if I tell you that I have to, you're watching my barrels in Tinek, and I have to go give shir at KJ, and you know on a Sunday morning it takes 25 minutes to get in, let's say 30 minutes of parking, walking, and so on, and you know that it's going to take me a similar amount of time back, and the shir is for now, okay, so the guy figures out, okay, I'm gone for 2+ hours, for sure he knows I'm not coming back in the time. So at this point he has the opportunity to open the barrels and to do whatever he wants. So the question is, how much time is the requisite time for the Nachri to commit the crime, in effect, in quotes, and cover it up. So there are two opinions here, the Tanakam and Rav Shimon Gamliel, and they're going to repeat the very same machlokas over and over and over again. The Gemara is going to say, well, why do we need like three different, four different cases? It's not so compelling, but the Tanakam says the following, Kedesha Yishtom V'Yistom V'Yigov. Three things. Yishtom, Rashi says, this is a very odd word. Rashi says it's based upon the occurrence, probably the only place it occurs. I mean, it occurs a couple of times there. Bilam, Harasha, describes himself as Shisum Ha'ayin. So Chazal have a debate of what it means, but the Pshat is Pasuach. It means clear vision. There is a tradition that he was blinded, so he had only one eye open, one eye closed. But Rashi says that Shesum Ha'ayin is the same root as this. So Kadesha Yishtom means he has the opportunity to open it up, but the way he opens it up is not by taking the lid off the barrel. And imagine the following. You have these barrels of cheres, of pottery, and then you make a pottery lid for the barrel, and then you put it on top, and then you seal it with like mud or something, clay around it that dries. Tit is what you use to dry, and it forms a kind of a seal. So the Tanakhama assumes the possibility that the guy might just make a hole in it, and that's what Yishtom is. But now that he's done that, and he extracts some wine, he does whatever he does, and then he's got to seal it up to cover up the fact that he opened it up. So he'll put some, you know, he'll fill in that hole and kind of smooth it over. And then, so that's the Yistom, and then the Yigov is that has to have enough time to dry so that it kind of blends in. Because while it's still wet, it's going to be obvious. You look at your barrel and say, this doesn't look like the barrel I left because this looks like there was a hole here and, you know, the seal is still drying. So that's the Tanakama's position. Ad Kadesha Yishtom, the Yistom, the Yigov. The only thing, which is not really a I don't think it's of any substantive significance, as you're going to see in the next Rabbi Shimon Leal's line, I don't know why the word v'yigov is not v'sigov. Yishtom and yistom is what he does, just taking the verb. Yigov means to dry, and in the next case, it's v'sigov, which makes sense. The chasima has to dry, it should be feminine, not masculine. So I don't know why. I looked in the Mishnah, in the Mishnah itself, in the Echad Bos, nobody comments on it. Why is one a zachar, one a keva? I'll admit I didn't go looking to check the kisveyad, if that's the case, but it occurs every single time in the Mishnah, like four times over, the very same thing. The chachamim say, yishtom, v'yistom, v'yigov, and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, Yiftach, which I'll explain what he means in a minute. Yiftach, v'yigof, v'sigov, which I think makes more sense, the third feminine singular. Okay.
What does v'yigof mean? Dry?
Well, let me try. We're talking about that. So, no. Hold so, v'yigov or v'yigof?
V'yigof.
We go with a vase. It means to dry. Dry so that you won't be able to recognize.
What are you worried about? Just if he pours it out, that doesn't...
No, you worry that he stuck a straw in, he drank some, and once he does that and comes in contact with it, he makes the whole thing ayin esach. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says no.
Kadesh... It's a little hole. It's tough to imagine you're going in.
Even if he drinks from a straw, that's going to create a problem. Right? Because some of it's going to go back in, like when you drink out the straw.
Yeah.
So we've encountered that before. That will be a problem. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says no. Kedesh yiftach es chavis, enough time for him to open the barrel. Now, open the barrel doesn't mean make a hole. It means sort of remove the lid on top. But the assumption also is, I don't know enough about earthenware barrels, that when you remove the lid, you can't reuse it. You probably ends up breaking in the process. So he needs enough time to open it, to yigof, which means to somehow make a new lid. I don't know how much time that actually entailed. And then needs to seal it on visigo so that it will dry, so that you can tell that it was sealed very, very recently. So that's the machlokas. The one thing that we can say with certitude is that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's amount of time is certainly longer, probably considerably longer, than that the Chachamim allow for him being not present, or more, not him not being present, or being not present, but rather his letting the guy know he will not be present for that amount of time. Now, if you look at the contrast in the Mishnah, what are the two scenarios? On the one hand, the Mishnah says, if it's becheskas ha-mishtamer, then the wine is fine. But if he tells the guy that I'm going, you know, sayonara, see you later, so then, at a certain amount of time, it's a problem. So the question is, if I asked you, what does it mean, becheskas ha-mishtamer? So I would have just said, if you didn't let the guy know that you were being mafli. In other words, I would have said that the second side, namely imhodiyo shumafli, is what becomes problematic. Anything else is considered a mishtamer. For some reason, the Gemara
is...
What?
It's an odd language.
It is odd. And it's...
The way you just described it versus the language is this odd.
Well, correct. In other words, but you can see sort of the structural contrast in the Mishnah.
Yes.
Right? You expect the Mishnah to teach you the liminal cases. So we understand, imhodiyo shuhumath, like I tell him I'm going on on an errand, so then I understand that he knows that I'm going on an errand, and he can figure out how much time will that approximate that errand take, he can make an estimate whether he can get into the yai and make it yai nesach or not. And I would have said that if he doesn't know I'm going on an errand, as far as he's concerned, I'm stepping off, I'm stepping away just to check my email, and I'll be back in 90 seconds, so then he can't do anything. And the truth is I could be gone for 90 minutes or, 10 hours, but he may think that I'm coming. Each moment he thinks he's going to be back in just a second. He'll be back in just a second. And therefore he's going to be afraid to do it because he's afraid that he's going to get caught. So I would have thought again that anything that to be becheskas hamishtamer, anything short in hodiyo shehumaflig should qualify. But then it's very odd that the Mishnah formulates it that way. But even more odd, which we'll come to in a little bit. But if you just look to the Gemara for a second, the Gemara immediately asks hechi dami becheskas hamishtamer, and it doesn't give the answer. The Gemara is not im lo hodiyo shehumaflig. That's not the answer. So the Baalei Tosfos are kind of wondering like, why does the Gemara not just simply assume that becheskas hamishtamer is anything short of modiyo shehumafli? Okay, but we'll come to that. But now the Mishnah has a number of other cases. So the first case was...
At any point, the Gemara maybe gets into the actual... How much time is that?
Nah.
What's the difference?
So the answer, they don't, and you have to remember... I just read a great quote. Someone wrote that the person who invented the clock thought he had finally achieved that human beings would control time, and the exact opposite happened. Now, when we learn in halacha, when we learn about various kinds of things, and we talk about time, you have to remember they didn't have clocks. They didn't have anything of that nature. You talk about, I'm going to daven vasikin. So I know certain people. In Bergen County, there's at least one shul with a vasikin in it. I know people who've stopped davening there because the OCD of, they have like the atomic clock sitting on the amud. And it's like, if you're 5 seconds early, 5 seconds late, they'll stone you to death, right? How could that be? But you have to remember that this kind of precision once upon a time is inconceivable. When the Gemara in... you know, the Gemara, I think in Brachos, talks about the shear of you know, when people would stop doing malacha or certain kinds of things. They didn't have clocks, so you had to judge from the sun if it was a cloudy day, and it was very overcast. It was very hard to tell. Right, so they had different ways of telling time, but until some point, probably in, you know, I would guess in the first half of the second millennium Europe, there was no such thing as a clock. You had sand timers, you had sundials, but people could not live by a watch or a clock. You know, you had a sense of the day. So the idea of giving a time, even when the Gemara does give a time, by the way, it's given, as far as I can recall, it's given in terms of meal, how long it takes to walk a certain distance, not how long, you know, not how many minutes or how many hours. So you have such a thing, but, you know, hours, we talk about Shah Raviyah, Shah Hamisha, Sener Pesach, but that's not something that people could have measured. In fact, if you look at the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, when they talk about reconciling the testimony of two witnesses, right, the testimony has to match up. So they ask them, what time did the murder occur? So the Mishnah says, if one says the fourth hour, one says the fifth hour, so we assume they're talking about the same time, but one is more bucky in figuring out the shows than the other. If one says hour five, and one says at the end of the seventh hour, where for one the sun is on, you know, the eastern side of its zenith, and the other it's the western side of its zenith, so then we assume there's a contradiction in testimony. So there, it is pretty rare, it's pretty rare that the Gemara is ever going to give anything that we would think of as time, because they just didn't have the capacity to tell that. In fact, I always ask one of my favorite, you know, kind of trivia questions, but Moshe Rabbeinu in the Medrash, he comments that God descends to create the plague Vayihi Bachatzi Halayla. But Moshe... Oh, not my problem, Marshall. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Paro, Kachatzos Halayla Ani Yosef Yitzchak Mitzrayim. So the Medrash is bothered by the fact, why does God we know comes Bachatzi Halayla, that's what happens, at midnight exactly. Moshe says Kachatzos Halayla, which the Pshat simply means as the night divides. It's not the Ka approximately, but the Medrash says Kachatzos around Chatzos. So why did Moshe Rabbeinu say Kachatzos of God was going to come down Bachatzi Halayla? So the Medrash says because Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid that the Itztagninim of Paro would make an error in their calculations, and they would say that Moshe Rabbeinu was Badai because the plague didn't happen in Chatzos, it happened in 1201, which I think is actually kind of funny, because, you know, it's like, great, God then came down and smote your firstborn, wiped out your entire firstborn population, but it happened at 1201, so you're going to say Moshe Rabbeinu is Badai, but fine. Okay, be that as it may, so what's the Itztagninim, what do the astrologers have to do with anything? Why the astrologers? So the answer is because when you, in a time, during the day at least you have a sundial. How do you tell time at night? The answer is, ancients don't tell time at night because the stars rise just like the sun. And the constellation that rises at that particular time of season, when it's directly overhead, so that's when Chatzos HaLaila is. Certainly at that time in the springtime. So that's why the Itztagninim, who again, astrology and astronomy were once not two separate disciplines, that's why they would have been the ones to tell. But ordinarily speaking, today, you want to know, they want to daven Slichos, you know, the first night of Slichos, so what do? Everybody's looking at their watch, you know, what time is Chatzos and so on. But that's just, that's because we have become slaves to our timepieces. So that's why the Gemara doesn't discuss in any form. Not surprisingly, it doesn't give a shear, and I think it's contained with the fact, I suspect that more people knew how much time it took to do a barrel than it how many, you know, than to have any approximation of actual time. That would be my guess. Right. Yes.
In Brachot, in the first or second half, the Zman of Kriyat Shema is, according to one, is when the Mishmar changes. So, right? That's what it was.
Correct.
That's four opinions, if I remember correctly. But, so I always wonder, so when does the Mishmar change? When the sun comes up? So why doesn't it say when the sun comes up? And I always thought of the relationship.
No, the mishmaros, the night is divided up either into three or four mishmaros.
According to one, it's four. But when the mishmar changes, that's when the time of bringing the carbon.
No, the mishmar
is the time of Kriya Shema.
Kriya Shema. That's Sofa Shmur Rishon. It's dark. It's dark. The only way to have told that, by the way, and I assume the way the centuries knew to change was based upon the stars, knowing which constellation we know rose and what it had covered. They were actually very, very good at estimating arcs, you know, distance. I'm amazed that they could do it so accurately. But basically, either third or fourth, you know, when it reaches, you know, it climbed a certain degree in the sky, that's when the mishmaros changed. Yeah.
Well, they're even on pi. They're off by 1/10 of 1% or something.
Well, the shear that the Gemara uses for pi is 3. But based upon the Amshar Shlomo. It's a significant difference. The Baalei HaTosfos noted that the number is incorrect. Okay. Anyway, but as far as time is concerned, certainly, so there's no, and then they're not going to give that share, and they don't actually discuss the time at all. Okay, so the next case is the following. Hamaniach Yain Bekar. The first case was you had the Akum porting your wine. Now, Hamaniach Yain Bekaron O Besvina. You leave your wine either in a wagon or in a boat with the care and the trust of the Nachri. And Behalach Lo Bekapandarya. It's a very odd usage of the word here. I don't know what the word actually means. It's probably a Greek word. It's used in the Mishnah in Brachos, in the ninth parak, that you're not allowed to make the Harabayis or a Beis HaKnesses a Kapandaria. I mean, you're not allowed to make it as a shortcut. It's not so relevant here, but I have this every single day. If it's raining in my shul, so we daven in the sanctuary, in the old Beis Medrash, the old sanctuary that's here, and there's a hallway in between, and the shortest distance to the parking lot would be through the new sanctuary, and if you're parked right, you might only spend 5 feet in the pouring rain, but you're not allowed to go through that. Theoretically, you could go into the main shul, you could sit down, read a pasuk, you know, Shivisi Hashem Le'Bisam, and there you go through. But in principle, you're not allowed to make a Beis HaKnesses or HaRabayis a Kapandaria. So there it means a shortcut. So here, I'm not sure, it means some type of a path. I'm not sure the exact valence here, but v'halach lo b'kapandari. Here it sounds like he wanted to go on a stroll. V'nichnas l'medina, v'rachatz. He entered the medina. The medina here is probably the city. He enters the town, v'rachatz, and he goes to the bathhouse. He wants to go to the shvitz for a little bit. And in the meantime, of course, his nachri worker is on the boat watching the wine. And the question is, how much time is he allowed to be away? So the Mishnah says, it's mutter. Im hudio shumaflig kadeshi yishtom v'yistom v'yigov. Then if he's told him he's going to be a while, then and he's going to be going to the bathhouse, then depending on how much time the Nachri anticipates, it either has to be yishtom v'yistom v'yigov or Rav Shimon Lil Omer kadeshi yiftach asachavis v'yigov v'segov. The exact same thing.
What do we need this?
The Gemara wants to. What? We're not done. All right. How many?
The construction of the how it's laid out on the page. Why? Normally the no periods and no commas in terms of, you know, why is that?
So I have a suspicion, although I don't really know. There's a comment the Ran has. The Ran observes that he's going to explain, even though these are later Mishnayos. He's going to explain them now once he's dealing with the Mishnah, which is kind of interesting because you rarely see something of that nature. But it looks, so this is what I would say, which is that you have to remember the process, which we don't know exactly, of Mishnayos appearing in the Gemara. If you remember the first parak of Sanhedrin, the last parakim of Sota, the first parak of Shavuos, I'm sure there are many others, the entire parak of Mishnayos is placed at the beginning. Now, in most of the manuscripts, in fact, pretty much all the manuscripts, in the Gemara itself, you don't have a Mishnah. All you have, the only remnant, if you want to call, of the early Mishnah, which in the case of the Talmud Bavli is the Babylonian version of the Mishnah, the only true remnant are the Piskaot, the things that we always ignore, between the two dots. You know, the quotations of the Mishnah. That's actually, again, aside from scribal errors and scribal levelings, that's the original Mishnah. The Mishnahs that we have, that are our Gemara, are a Mishnah that was reintroduced into the Gemara. So I like to say sometimes the printers were lazy, so they just took the entire mixed Mishnah and they stuck it at the front. And sometimes they broke it up into pieces. So I don't know what Rishonim. We have several medieval manuscripts, but we have very little. In fact, I recall, I don't know where I read this and encountered this, and I have never seen it in a Ksav Yad. I've never seen an Iksaviyah that once upon a time the Mishnayos were in the Gemara and then they were taken out and then later reintroduced. Of the Kisviyah that I have seen, and I probably in one point or another have seen at least pretty much almost every major Iksaviyah of the Gemara, they're available online. So the only manuscript that I can remember there may be others, but that I remember and prominent that has the mission in it is Ksav Yad Munich, which is the only complete manuscript of the Bavli, Munich 95. The scribe was a lousy scribe. He makes tons of errors. He abbreviates half his words. It's very annoying.
I believe it's 9th century, right?
No. The Ksav Yad Munich, I think, is a 14th... I think it's 14th century. It's either 13th or 14th, but I think it's 14th. It's not a very good manuscript. It's just famous because it's complete in that sense. And the scribe put in the Mishnayos, but the Mishnayos are not actually in the Gemara. If you look at images, you can go online probably. I think the Munich Library has put the manuscript online or through the Hebrew U, treasury of Talmudic manuscripts. If you see the Munich manuscript, you'll see the Mishnah is written, imagine like a Gemara and Rashi, where there's tons and tons of Rashi and just a little bit of Gemara and there's no Tosas. So the Mishnah is written, I think, on the inside margins of the manuscript. You know, it's a book, it's a codex. And in a much bigger font, and the Gemara basically covers the rest of the page. And Ksav Yad Munich also happens to write the Mishnayos for non-Gemara Masechtos. So for Adios, for example, which I worked on, there is a full manuscript of the Mishnah, but the scribe, it's a very lousy piece of work. But it's complete, so it's famous for that reason. And Rem Rabinowitz, who did the Dikduke Sofrim at the end of the 20th century, he used Ksav Yad Munich kind of as his foil. He did his Dikduke Sofrim, it's his critical, you call it a critical edition. He had two columns. He had the Gemara that we had printed, probably the Vilna Shas, and he had the Ksav Yad, which was, I believe, Munich, and then all of the manuscripts he makes notes at the bottom. Right, so it's complete, so it's useful in that regard, but for my opinion, that's about all its great use. That's all of its use. So bottom line is, I don't know exactly how the Mishnayos sort of worked their way back in exactly. I mean, we know they came back in. So this is what we have. So I suspect in this case, the Ran already betrayed some type of an awareness that the rest of the Mishnah kind of belongs to somebody else. Although there's really, my recollection is, there's nothing on the latter part. In other words, every part of the discussion in the Gemara, the next two daf, which is including this Amud, which deals with this Mishnah, I don't know that any of it deals with the latter parts of the Mishnah more than the four first parts of the Mishnah. The first three cases are essentially identical, just three different scenarios. The Gemara will create its Sri Chusa, will explain, why do we need A, B, and C? Okay, and it only explains C should have been sufficient, I think, without A and B, but just because you told us A, we don't know B, and just because you told us B, we don't know C. And that's all the Gemara has to say. And the rest of the discussion is really either relates to all of them equally, or it could be almost independent of the Mishnah. So I don't know why the Ran is aware that some of the stuff doesn't really belong, but so that may be related to why also you have they were kind enough to put in colons for us in the Mishnah. But be that as it may. So case number two was the guy who leaves in the boat and he goes to go to the Shvitz. Then the third case is Hamaniach Oved Kohavim Bechanus Af Alpi Sheyotze V'nichnas Mutar. If you leave a non-Jew in your store with the wine. Now, there's a question in general throughout this whole thing. I'm going to work with the assumption, but it's a big discussion in the Rishonim, that the barrels are sealed here. Okay, there is... Now, obviously, to some extent, the barrels are sealed, because in some situations we say that if you let him know that you're going to go on an errand, if he has enough time to open it, seal it, close it, seal it, then obviously the barrels were closed in the first place. The question would be, though, let's say you didn't tell the guy. Let's say you didn't tell the guy you were being maflig, and he knew you could come back. Does it matter if the barrels are open? Does that change the amount of time? Or did we say that the guy has no idea? You could come back in 15 seconds, and even with open barrels, he's not going to take his chance. Because it's only in the last part of the mission. We're not there yet. We're still part number three. Only in the last part is the Gemara going to draw the mission going to draw a distinction between Chavis Psucha and Chavis Stuma. Only there is it going to draw a distinction. Okay. So anyway, so Hamaniach Avikochav Bechanus Afal Pishiyotze Menichnas Motor V'imhodio Shem Maflig. Then the Shir is surprise, surprise. Kedei Sheyishtom V'yistom V'yigov Rav Shimon Ben Omer Kedei Sheyiftach Es Chavis V'yigov V'segov. Okay. Finally, the last case, which is at least a little bit different. Haya ochel imo al ha-shulchan. V'hiniach leginim al ha-shulchan, or lagin. V'lagin or leginim al ha-dulbaki. So you're eating with a non-Jew, and there is a wine bottle on the table. And then there's some wine bottles on the server, on the side, on the sideboard. V'hinicho v'yatza. And then you step out. So the Mishnah says, Mashallah Shulchan Asur. Anything that's left on the Shulchan is Asur, but Sha'al Hadul Baki is Motar. Why? The assumption is that the guy, you put wine on the table, yeah. The assumption is he's allowed to pour it for himself. When it's on the dubaki, what the guy should assume is that it's not meant for this meal. That presumably you have another meal, and he doesn't want to get into that because he wouldn't take the wine to drink ordinarily because it's not for him to drink, and therefore he doesn't want to get caught. You know, it would be it would look a little bit suspicious. It would look a little bit suspicious if he were in fact to have his hands on that wine. So the Mishnah says, draws that distinction. But if he says to the guy, have a mosaic v'shosa, drink, pour yourself a glass, much whatever you like. Then, even that which was on the sideboard is also prohibited. Chavios psuchos are asuros. Now, in this situation, let's say you left the guy in your dining room, and there are these barrels of wine. So if they're open, they're asuros. If they're stumos, they are mutaros. If you leave, kideisha yiftach v'yigov v'sigov. And you can immediately actually observe one very odd thing about this last part of the Mishnah. What would that be? It's only one opinion, which Rav is going to come along and observe. It looks like it's only, well, there's only one opinion here. The question is it a continuation of Rav Shimon Gamliel in part 3? It's probably not. You're correct. But Rav is going to come along in the Gemara on Amud Beis and say, we postulate Rav Shimon Gamliel because the Stam Mishnah here is like Rav Shimon Gamliel. And the Gemara says, yeah, duh, it's obvious. Why would you think otherwise? Then the answer is, the Gemara says, you might have thought this last part is all a continuation of Rashbag. So that's what Rav is telling you it's not. It's that there are four cases in the Mishnah. By the first three, the Mishnah presents two opinions. By the last case, the Mishnah presents only one opinion, thereby giving away how we paskin, namely that we are lenient like Rav Shimon Gamliel. Okay, so that's what the Mishnah has to say on this matter. This issue, by the way, we're not going to read it and really even explore it, but if you turn the page for a second and you look at Tosos Dibor Mascho Maitaima, now, does that look like a long tosos? Well,
yes, it does.
Because look to the bottom of the page and look onto the top of the next page. It's a reasonably long tosos. I mean, it might have, you know, if you squeeze the narrow lines into the fat lines, so it probably, you know, would mostly just fill out the missing part of the other tosos, maybe a little bit more, but it's still a pretty big tosos. Tosos there is preoccupied, as you might imagine, with, you know.
What happens in his community?
Yes, number one, and number two, how barrels of wine have to be sealed? Have to be concerned when you're sending the wine with a non-Jewish emissary? How many chasamas do you require? Sugyas that we've touched upon probably already years ago in the second parak, but Tosis here is dealing with this particular question. For us, I believe that the issue primarily comes up in the there are two situations. One, which I think is probably less common, is you're in a restaurant where my sense is, I don't know if policies have changed, but most kosher restaurants, if they have wine or if you bring in your wine, usually the rule is it has to be mevushal. I don't know if that, Marshall, you're probably much more experienced than I do, but that's the rule. So you never have to worry, technically speaking, unless you get a guy who's really menaseh chai, and then you really have to be choshish, but we don't assume that way. So it's the yain bushel is not a problem. Where it comes up is in your home. If you have open bottles of wine, and you have non-Jewish help, and you leave the house on regularly extended periods, and they know that, right? You go to work, your wife goes to work, and the regular hours, and the wine bottle has already been, if it's closed, well, if it's unopened, so you'll know when you come home it's open, that's pretty obvious, right? You don't have to make a cheshbon. There technically probably are two seals, both the fact that the cork is recessed and the paper or whatever foil seal around it. I don't even think in that context it would matter if you only had one seal because it's an unforgeable. We may only require one chosam, and that's an unforgeable seal. I mean, I'm sure there's a way, but for all of humanity, if you take the cork out of the wine bottle, you can insert an end of it in. You can't get the whole cork back in. I don't think we have any reason to be choshesh for that kind of a ziyuv. But if you have a wine bottle that you've opened and you just put the cork in, so do I think that the non-Jewish help is going and saying, my opportunity to be menaseh? Obviously not, but the halacha is still such that it is a concern. And they actually make I mean, the way one can deal with this is either by adding some type of a, like putting tape over in a way that someone opened it, they're not going to know to replace, they're not going to replace it, and so on. And that's basically a way of putting another putting a seal on it that you know if it was broken. They also, believe it or not, make this bottle, this wine stopper. Have you seen this, Marshall? Where you insert it in. And then it's a combination lock. And then once you first lock it, it expands, so you can't get it out unless you turn the combination, and then the thing will...
But we want the number combination?
It's like a bike lock. I mean, it's not different. You know, it's got like a little...
Was this invented by Central Wine, or was this invented by Kosher?
I'm sure it was...
Invented by someone so that kids couldn't get...
I don't know. The combination lock strikes me as odd. That they didn't do, because you wouldn't put a lock on it. You could have something that you just turn and it expands, but that you just unturn. The fact that it's got a combination lock is kind of interesting, right? That's not necessarily a ceiling. There he goes. But anyway, I'm sure we got it bought as a kosher item. Who invented it, you know, with a lock in the first place? That I can't tell you. But that is a solution to. Those are the two ways of really solving that problem. And the alternative is just finish the bottle of wine, you know, for the help gets there. Or if the person, if they're not Yotze, if you're Yotze v'nichnas and they don't know when you're coming back, that also addresses the issue. But typically speaking, during the course of the week, you know, they know that the husband and the wife both go to work, and that's an issue. So that's something actually one should be careful about. That if one is going to leave a non-mavushal bottle of wine that's been opened and leave it around, so that you should, you need to put some type of a thing. Either, again, I think if you put, you know, scotch tape it two ways, nobody's gonna think to. In the exceedingly unlikely event that the help would even bother to go with the wine, so you know, put it away that you recognize, and it's not going to be a problem at all. Or you could get this thing that Marshall is kindly finding for us.
It's not a frummy product; it's a regular. Product.
As really, just for the, with a combination lock.
Oh, yeah, I think
there's restaurants are like many versions of it on Amazon.
Cool.
Well,
okay.
But they're really a concern for Scott, something that would happen once in a million times. I mean, somebody said, oh,
Isaac, I'm going to go to the never. I know that in Metzius, I know that in reality, this is not happening, right? What?
Did you cook with that?
Wait, hold on.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't matter.
I have to tell you what the first question is on the product. You know, people on Amazon ask really stupid questions. Does this
I'm not macabre.
A gallon of milk? Who would be somebody with a combination lock?
Call up his
gallon of, right.
For the milk addicted lactose intolerant people in your house, Marshall. So Isaac, going back to your real question here. So I know in Metzius, I understand that in Metzius, they're not going into the wine. I got that. You know that industrial wine, nobody is menaseh. You know that. Right? You know it's probably not even been touched by a human being. But the halacha still, you know, demands. You know, as I've said many a time, there are new gzeris I'd like to make and old gzeris I'd like to undo. But we don't have a central authority, so we're effectively stuck with both.
Wait, hold on. What are two new gzeris you'd like to make?
So Marshall, I always say, you might disagree, being the business world that I'm not, it's easy for me to say, I think that it should be permissible to drink, if I had a Sanhedrin, I would make a new gzeira, we would undo the gzeira of Stam Yenam when it comes to industrial wine, and we would prohibit Jews drinking any alcohol in the presence, social presence of non-Jews. How's that? I understand. The Rosh Yeshiva sits in the Yeshiva. It's easy to say, but I think there's good reason for that. Right? There is a reason why Chazal made the Gzeira they did. The problem is the way they made the Gzeira is not the way the Gzeira would be relevant today. Right? But that, I think, is sort of essential way of doing things.
Good luck making a wedding.
What's that?
Good luck making a wedding.
But there's a reason for it, right? There's a very good reason for it. We could talk about how to tweak the Gzeira, but fundamentally, we understand there's a very, very good reason for it. What's that?
That include business or just social?
This is not... you're asking me a hypothetical question. If I were on the Senator making it... obviously, the line can sometimes blur, right? The part of the reason why you drink in business is for kind of... creating a social atmosphere. I understand it's complicated. I understand it's much less complicated for Rosh Yeshiva, who doesn't, you know, have to worry about this. When we get together, our business...
What? Otherwise, we can't pay your salary.
So. You know, Rosh Yeshiva get together, they're really happening events, and we're drinking away, so...
But then the gzeira should be also for scotch and bourbon.
That's what I said. I said alcohol. That was my point. That was my point. Right now, something purchased. Listen, I want to take this discussion further, and I understand the complexity. It makes life difficult in certain ways, but as with many things, Orthodox Jews and non-Orthodox Jews in particular have forgotten. If I get the line exactly right, it's a modified version of the line that, and it may not be Rav Lichtenstein's, but just as there is the mitzvah of Kiddush, there's also a mitzvah of Havdalah. And I think that we, both in practical terms and in ideological terms as a community, have not fully assimilated that.
Meaning what?
We don't have a sense that of what I would call va'avdil eschem in amim liosli, that we're supposed to be separate. Mm-hmm. It's true both in practical terms, and it's true when it comes to absorbing ideologies. And it happens in the Haredi community as well, but they're much more alert to it. The things that they miss are the values that aren't obvious. The hot-button values issues, they fight against, and they make it Yehari Galyavar, whether it's feminism, LGBT, but other kinds of issues, I'll call economics issues, so which are not hot-button issues, they absorb just like we do. Right? In other words, there's a lack of sense of, one second, our value system is supposed to be coming from somewhere else, and in practical terms. So again, we live in a world that is far more accepting of us than ever was, that loves us so much they will marry us and make us disappear. We never had to worry that much about this kind of an issue 100 years ago. It's nice to be loved, but it comes with a lot of issues. So it is? Okay. Anyway,
that was gazero. Alcohol and.
I have to give another one. Oh, well, I would probably. I mean, I would. If you, I'm just going to give you a theorem. I would permit. Most industrial cheeses in the United States, because virtually nobody uses tray fermented anymore. And even people who do use tray fermented, you probably have shitos. Those who permit gelatin might permit the forms of rennet that they use. I'm pretty sure about. Marshall will tell me I'm wrong. Nobody in the United States, even in the fanciest cheeses that might use animated, nobody takes the stomach of the animal, the lining, and dips it in the milk. It's extracted from the stomach lining. It's cultured, produced in whatever forms, but I don't think anybody takes the stomach lining, which already may bring you to already machlokas aposkim as to whether or not that's really a problem. Forget the gzera of giving the sakum. Let's say you take the rennet, that kind of rennet, and you make cheese with it. That may be the same as the gelatin question. But since it's a fairly good bet, almost all cheese in this country anyway, fewer and fewer use animal rennet, I would want to be matur that. That would be my personal itzar. I don't drink anyway, in any context, so it makes no difference. The alcohol doesn't matter to me, but the cheese I really like. So, okay.
But the truth is, in Europe, it actually for sure is still done. I'm sure there are.
That's why I said the United States. Got it.
If you go to the actual origin of where they made camembert, they actually show you the process they use, at least when I was there, and they actually literally did dip animal parts.
They dipped the animal, wow, okay. Right, so everything in this country is kind of, it's behind them like the United States.
One
but I did choose, I with one step.
Less authentic.
Yes, correct. So that's why I specifically chose the United States, because I think cheese processing here is more industrialized, let's put it that way.
Does a chasima today have to be a physical thing, or can it be, let's say, an alarm? Let's say you had a smart cork.
I think it would be the same thing. I think it would be permissible. I think that would also be acceptable. And I think that when you have, I think it's clear from the Gemara, again, I didn't check the Shulchan Aruch recently. We may only really require one chosam, at least the Balei Tosfos do, but I think that something that's essentially unforgeable is like two chosamas. And as for them, one chosam was not so hard to necessarily do, but to go through the trouble of two, that was already too much.
Well, there's an app where you can scan food and it tells you whether it's Rehu or the Shulchan Melech, so you can know whether a non-Jew could turn on the stove for you.
What, did you write the app, Marshall? Okay, fine. So now
the Mashgiach, one of the Mashgiach told me that he can turn on the oven remotely.
Okay, right.
So there's an app, so that a Jew turned on the oven.
Okay.
Why not? I mean, simple technology.
It works.
Okay. So
it's changing too much for me.
So the Gemara says the following: Heichi dami becheskas hamishtane. When the Mishnah says it at the beginning, the Mishnah provides two opposites. One case is that if you leave the guy with your wine, the guy who's the porter with your wine, and it is becheskas hamishtamer, I mean, you walk away, but it has a chazaka of being guarded, it's fine. If you let the guy know that you're being maflid, that you're going on an errand, that you're going to disappear for a while, so then it's usur if the amount of time that the errand typically takes is more than X time or Y time. So the Gemara says, what is the definition of Becheskas HaMishtamer? As we pointed out earlier, the Gemara could have said, but doesn't. You know what Becheskas HaMishtamer is? If you don't tell the guy that you're about to leave. That's what Tosus actually asks. In Tosus Dibar Maskel Hechidami, and he wants to know why. Why does the Gemara not assume that Cheskas HaMishtamer is simply you didn't let him know? And the answer Tosus basically is that the language of the Mishnah suggests otherwise. Right? The Mishnah should have said that im hodio shumafli gosser v'in lo hodio, it's mutter. From the fact that it's a Cheskas HaMishtamer, sounds as if there's something else going on. So let's see what the Gemara does with this. The Gemara says the following, and it's difficult Gemara. Kidetanya. Harei shehoyu chamaravu po'alav te'unim taharos. Your workers are holding, they're carrying, they are loaded up with, literally, te'unim, with food that is taharos, things that you have to keep tahar. It might be truma, it might be chulat, and that you want to keep ritually pure. And the question is, are we concerned that you're chamarim and poalim? And the assumption right now is they are ame ha'aretz. And ame ha'aretz were not...
Neman.
They weren't neman, and they weren't careful about both trumas and maestros, and about separating the proper tithes, and about tuma v'tara. Now, some people, by the way, were careful about trumas and maestros, but they weren't concerned about tuma v'tara. But these ame aretz were concerned with neither. Right? It's a different valence than the term ame aretz today. There's some overlap today. The term ame aretz, there's a history to this. In the Torah, the ame aretz is not an insult or a put down. We saw it, I think, last week's parasha, 2 weeks ago. Am ha'aretz just means the people. Where in the Chazal, Am ha'aretz refers to a specific class of people, and Am ha'aretz versus a chaver. And today, it's just a pejorative. When you call someone Am ha'aretz, that's an insult. That's intended as an insult. It's not necessarily a factual description. It might also be a factual description, but it's not. But it's primarily an insult today. Whereas for Chazal, it had negative connotations, but it wasn't an insult. It was actually a halacha category. So you have these workers who we presume are Am ha'aretz. They're not careful on Tumah V'Tahara. And they're carrying your stuff on your donkeys, and the concern is maybe they touch the stuff. So the Braisa says, "Afilu hifig mehem kidei mil." Even if you go a distance of a mil, so here's the way we calculate time. A mil we usually assume today is 18 minutes. A mil is actually a kilometer. It's a very, very leisurely walk. They talk about the sheer of how far a person can walk in one day. Is I think Eser Parsaos, which is 40 mil, which is 40 kilometers, which is about 24 miles. And the truth is, for a daily, I understand. In other words, if you walk at 2 miles, and it's, when we say a daily distance, we mean you're traveling all day. To travel on average, if you're traveling, you know, 10 hours for the day, 10 hours of time, it's like 24 minutes a mile. It's not very fast. What?
Not a marathon.
Well, that's because it's 2.2 miles short. It would just be a very slow marathon. It wasn't a running marathon, but it would be a very slow marathon. But the point is, the pace of 18 minutes a kilometer is pretty slow. You could almost crawl. I'm exaggerating, but
to be fair, roads were bad, shoes were bad, and people were hiking.
Think hiking, okay? Hiking on woods roads. That's a better way of putting it. Okay, hiking on woods roads, it's pretty comfortable to manage 15 to 20 minutes a mile, I think. Once you get onto rocky things, it's a little harder. I mean, I don't mean pushing it. So I think it's comfortable, right? Now, as I think we give the sheer, again, it's one thing to walk for 4 hours doing 15-minute miles. It's another thing to walk for 10 miles doing 10 hours walking 15 miles. So that's the sheer 18 mil. When we talk about Bein HaShemashos, is either two-thirds of it, the Bein HaShemashos in Israel's latitude, in Yemei Nisan, is either two-thirds or three-quarters of a mil, either 12 minutes or 13, and we assume 13 and a half minutes, three-quarters of a mil. So that's the shear. So even if he goes away for 18 minutes, the matzah might rise in the meantime, so his tarosav are not a problem. Now, the girsa we have in our Gemara is yoser mimil. I'm not sure if that is significant. In other words, presumably it really shouldn't matter how much time. See, the truth is, the longer that you're away, the more time he has to do something, but the longer you're away, I think the more he anticipates he'll be back any minute. So it's mutar. Amar lahem lechu vani ba acharechem. Go ahead of me. I will follow up. I have to go take care of something. Kevan shenis alma eino mehem. As soon as he can no longer see them, to watch where their hands are. Taharos of Timaeus. That's what the Brisa says. So the Gemara. It's a very strange what's going on. The Gemara immediately asks, Maishna Resha, Maishna Seifa. Why is there a difference between the two cases? In one case, you walk away, and you don't tell them how long you're going to be gone. The other one, you don't tell them you're gone, but you tell them, you know, go ahead, and I'll follow you. So, but the way Rashi, the question of the Gemara actually runs deeper is Rashi says, if these people are my aretz and the tmeim, you see them loading up the food. Right? It doesn't matter whether you go away or don't go away. Everything's going to be tame. You know, it's even in the Reisha. That's the way Rashi understands this. Even in the Reisha, you see the guys touching it. So how is it ever going to be tar? Forget whether you walk away or not. So that's the way Rashi understands the question. It's a difficult reading for a very simple reason, as Tosus points out. If this is what was bothering the Gemara, that the Am HaAretz, by virtue of being Tomei, automatically make it Tomei, the Gemara shouldn't have said, Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa. The issue is not, what's the difference between the Reisha and Seifa? The Reisha is inherently problematic. The first line is inherently problematic. Forget what it says in the Seifa. Bottom line is, how could it possibly be Tahar, just because you, even when you're standing there, it's going to be Tomei, because they're loading this stuff up, which means they're coming in contact with it. So, why does the Gemara ask, why are the two different? The Gemara should have said, why is the din in the Reisha the way it is?
Yeah.
No, that's what Tosus asks on Rashi. If you take a look in the last Tosus on the page, if you go down, and Rashi assumes, by the way, that all the stuff is open. And Tosus is saying, well, why does the Gemara assume that? But Tosus says, if you go to the fifth line in that Tosus, it's the fifth line from the bottom of the page, and the fifth line including the first line in the Tosus, Tosus says, I'm sorry, line 4, I apologize, the Ode Kasha, it's right in the middle of the line. The Ode Kasha, the Imairi Kimosha Perisha Kuntris, Imkein, Lohava Leila Mifrach, Mi Reisha Le Seifa, El Lohava Leila Mifrach, Me Reisha, Mine Ubei, Behedja. They should have asked from the Reisha, just within the first part, My time in the Reisha of Taros, Kevan Shumachsik Vovin Ogabahem. That these people, the Gemara right now assumes that the Amerits are Tameim. The answer the Gemara is going to give, by the way, is that he made them go to the mikveh right before. He's mitahir them. You can't do such a thing. Even Amerits, if you mitahir your workers before, let's say you could hire Amerits to work with stuff you don't want to become Tameim. But right now the Gemara doesn't know that. So if that were really the Gemara's question, they should have said, how can you do what you do in the Reisha? And therefore, Tosa says that he thinks it's talking about stuff that's in barrels. Rashi said it was open stuff. So they're literally touching it. So Tosa says it's talking about in barrels where it is not automatic. It's not automatic because you pick up the barrel. If you're a Tomei, as an Am HaAretz, if you pick up the barrel, you're not going to make the stuff automatically Tomei. Right, for whatever, without going into why that is, but if you're not touching the barrels, probably not makabel tuma from the outside, it's probably an earthenware barrel, whatever it is, and the stuff inside you're not touching. So it's very easily possible, normally the case, when the Amerites load up the donkeys and walk with it, even if the barrels are open, so it's not going to touch the stuff inside, so that's not a problem. But the concern is, they might go ahead and choose to touch it, and in that case, the Gemara wants to know, what's the difference between the Reish and the Seif? In other words, it's not automatic at all, but both cases, the barrels might be open. And if you're concerned about the Yamei or it's touching it, why are you concerned? If you just walk away for a little bit, why is that less of a concern with an open barrel than when you tell them, go ahead, I'll be behind you, I'll be coming behind you? Right? In other words, why do we assume that automatically, in the second case, the Yamei is not afraid anymore, and he will touch? So the Gemara answers, first it says, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha, Reisha b'mitaher chamarav u'po'al al lekach. No, you know why? You know why the stuff is in Tamei automatically? Because he prepared the workers. And therefore, the workers are tahar. So even if they touch the stuff, it's not going to become Tamei. Now, once you give that answer, though, you realize the Gemara's got the problem once again, because the Reisha and the Seifa deal with the same case. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, Ihachi, Seifa Nami.
Yeah.
So why aren't you concerned in the Sefer? Again, assuming, hypothesize for the moment, the Gemara hasn't given the answer to the question, but there's a difference between the level of fear of the workers in one cases, in the first case versus the second case. And because there's greater fear in the first case, there's less of a concern he will touch it. Because there's less of a fear in the second case, there's a greater concern that he's going to touch it. But putting that aside for the moment, the possibility has to be there, A, that he not automatically touch it, okay, B, that it's possible for him to touch it and make a tummy, but if he's tahar in both the Reish and the Seifa, you know, he could take a bath in it and it's still going to be tahar. So the Gemara says, no. Ein amar, it's makbid al maga chaveira. Yeah, you know what? His touching, it's not a problem. But if his friend comes by to shmooze, his friend might touch it, and he doesn't care if his friend touches it, it's not his problem. So the Gemara says, but ihache afi the Reisha nami name ahache. Okay, but now that you say that, what do you do with the Reisha? So amar Rava, biba lohem derech akolosa. In other words, the Reish is a case. He tells them, go ahead, I'll meet you at a certain place. Now, in the Seif, apparently, the only way to get there is to go in the same path they're going. And once they get ahead of him a little bit, they know that he's going to take a certain amount of time to catch up to him. But if he tells them to go to this corner, you know, and let's say they're dragging the donkeys, and it's a one-way for donkeys, so donkeys have to go, you know, the long way around the block. And he'll meet them there, but he can take the shortcut going against the one-way street. So then, he has a derech, literally it means a crooked way, but it means a shortcut. If he has a shortcut to get there, then they are always afraid that he might possibly see them, and therefore they're not going to let anybody else touch it. They have a sense that he was mitar them. He made them go to the mikveh, because he wants to keep his stuff tar. So now, you know, they don't want their friends touching the wine when he might actually come and see it. Okay, so that's how the Gemara explains. So what is Cheskas HaMishtamer in the Mishnah then? So in the Mishnah, if you don't tell the guy that you're leaving, but he sees you walk, and apparently, nobody fleshes this out. There's the Mishnah saying, Cheskas HaMishtamer is okay. If you tell him you're going on an errand, and he knows it's a certain amount of time, then you have the Machlokas, the Tanakam, and Rav Shimon Gamliel, how much time is that allowed to be? Okay, so but let's say you didn't tell him. Let's say you didn't tell him, well, that's not enough. It has to be Cheskas HaMishtamer, which apparently means he knows that as he's going, you look like you're going this way to this building, but there's a shortcut to come back, and he never knows when you might be coming back and you might catch sight of him, and that's called Cheskas HaMishtamer. But apparently it's not enough simply that you didn't tell him where you were going and how long you would be gone, what errand you were doing. So that's apparently...
implications for a mashgiach.
Yes. I suspect, I would even argue that this is essentially the definition of Yotzei V'Nichnas. And the Mishnah, I have to check and see if anybody explicitly points this out, but the Mishnah in the third case, HaMeneach Ov Kocham V'Chanos, Afubisha Yotzei V'Nichnas, is Motar. Right, so I think that is, Yotzei V'Nichnas is just another way of saying Mirtas. He's afraid of getting caught, and he knows you can walk in any second. Right, as opposed to the mashgiach has to go get something, and the workers know it. So then, if there's a certain amount of time, that's not yotzei v'nichnas anymore. Okay, let's read just one more small piece of the Gemara to kind of finish up with the Mishnah, which is the Mishnah. If you look in the third line on the Samach Tesam and Beis, hamaniach yeno bikaron. Obisvina, why does he do that? And then Hameniach Ovde Kohanuso, because the order is reversed. It's backwards. So, of course, by the way, if you asked me, in ignorance, I would have suggested the fact that the Piska has it out of order suggests that the original order of the Mishnah was in a different order. The reason I know that's wrong is probably because the next part of the Gemara. It's clear from the Gemara sequence in the presentation that it has to have been in this order. Because the way the Gemara explains that if I had A, I wouldn't know B, and if I had B, I wouldn't know C, would suggest that the order was ABC, which is the reverse order of what's in the Piska. But from a sort of perspective of antiquity of the text, what's found in this Piska, those two lines, is actually older than what we have in our actual Mishnah in front of us. So the Gemara says, Utsricha, you need all three cases. The Itana Oved Kochavim, if you taught me the case of an Oved Kochavim who's your porter, the Savar Dilma Asi V'Chazile. He thinks that, look, he's got the stuff on dry land, And I guess the guy is carrying it. In other words, he's carrying it on himself. It's not on something else. So he's got no place to hide or get away. So that's why he's afraid the Jew will see him. Aval bakor no besfina, ema de mafleg le besfina save ovid my de boy. You might say that by a boat the concern is, no, you know what? The guy, you know, you go somewhere. The guy figures, listen, here's my chance. I'm going to push the boat offshore a little bit to where he can't see me. And then I will do what I need to do so he won't get to see what's going on. And when he comes back, well, the worst case scenario, the boat's all, I'll say, you know, we drifted off by accident or something like that. So that's why I have to tell us that even in the case of the Karen or the Sfina, if the guy doesn't know, has no way of knowing that you're not going to be back for a while, then it's mutter. And then the e tana bekarno besfina. But if you taught me the case of the wagon or the boat, mishum de savar duma ase beurcha harise vekoi aguda vechazili. Maybe he'll take a different path. He'll be standing maybe on the other side of the river, the other side of the canal where I pushed the boat off towards, because he found the route there. And now he's going to be watching me. Right? I pushed. We're on this side of the river. I pushed the boat off to this side, and all of a sudden, you know, he pops up. Hi, how are you doing on the other side? So the guy is afraid of that, but. But aval ovid kochavim b'chanuso emar achid le lebava. Perhaps he will be ochez. He will see. I'll close the door, the gate. Va'avid called the boy. And therefore, kamash malon. Therefore, the Mishnah tells us that in fact you need all three cases. You might have thought that some of the cases should be machmir. So A, we wouldn't have known B. B, we wouldn't have known C. That's why you tell us A, B, and C. Now, why, again, very often in Shas, and I don't know why the Gemara sometimes does this, sometimes doesn't do it, the Gemara will say, okay, but just tell us C, and we'll know B and A. It's a Kal v'chomer, and I don't know why. Sometimes the Gemara does, sometimes it doesn't. I would be, if I were a little, not cynical, but if I were being a little clever, based Medrash Bachar, I would say that's because sometimes the Gemara can make the Tzrichas of both ways, whereas other times it can't. The Gemara does have a concept, actually, in the Mishnah. Sometimes when the Gemara is faced with two cases, where one is a lesser chiddush than the other, the Gemara will explain, does A and B, and if you told us A, we would have known B, and they'll explain what the Mishnah is saying is A, vein sarach lomar B, which is not really answering the question, right? It's just describing the fact that B is superfluous. Okay, but that's how some, you know.
The Gemara brings down minority opinions where it says ain halacha. So, you know, even everything should be brought down because there could be a circumstances. There could be a something.
Again,
somewhere.
If the Gemara. But
then why ask the question?
Yeah, why ask the question? And why give the answer of Zove and Sarach Lomar Zo Katani?
Maybe it could apply in some unusual circumstances.
Okay, but the Gemara doesn't say that. Okay. All right. Yeah. So we'll pick